This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Concrete is a basic building block of modern construction. But for North Carolina sculptor Thomas Sayer, it is a medium for art. Using the earth as a cast, Thomas Sayer creates giant metal sculptures. His work is featured all over the world, including one exhibit that's part of a permanent collection at North Carolina Museum of Art. Although his art is unusual, it is certainly not solitary. Thomas Sayer is an evangelist for public art, often involving communities in his process. The new documentary film, Earthcaster, traces Sayer's work, inspirations, and connections to the community. Earthcaster debuts on UNC TV Thursday at 10 o'clock. Thomas Sayer joins me now on The State of Things. Welcome, Thomas.
Greetings, Frank.
Also with me is one of the film's producers, Donna Campbell. Hello, Donna.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for letting us be here today.
It's good to have you. Thomas, describe the process that you have in making your sculptures.
Well, earth casting is a process of digging a mold or a shape into the earth itself with various tools, backhoes down to little hand tools, and then pouring reinforced concrete into that shape and then lifting, once cured, that shape out of the ground and standing it up against the sky, usually. So it's a very an odd process, but one that's very efficient to make large things, large permanent things, where the character of the geology itself of nature is fundamentally part of a collaborative connection between the artist.
Well, tell us more about that and how you came to this idea, because as you suggest, it's more than just practical. The earth could make a big cast. On the other hand, there is an aesthetic behind this and a kind of theory about why you would use the earth as a cast. Tell us more.
Well, I think as a culture, we could do better at balancing human intention with the grain of nature. And that's, in a nutshell, what earth castings are about. I control the art up to a point, and then the color and the texture and exactly what happens in that mold, if it rains or not, etc. All that, in the end, affects the outcome of these very rich and wonderful surfaces. So it's partly human and partly natural.
What got you thinking about this kind of process? Why did you decide to take it on?
Like most good things, it sort of came over time. The older I got, the more willing I was to let serendipitous forces enter into the art, which, when you think about it, is like life itself. We steer our little boats through life, but life pushes back and asserts what it wants. So the art really reflects how I see living a life.
Donna Campbell, you went to Lenoir, North Carolina at the beginning of Thomas's project there. First, what drew you to this, and what did you find when you went to Lenoir?
Well, actually, Georgia Ann Eubanks and I have been working on documentaries about people in North Carolina for, you know, the last 20 years. And our good friend Lee Carroll Geddes, who works with the Caldwell Arts Council up in Lenoir, said she had a new arts project going on and she'd like for us to come and take a look. And she said Thomas Sayer was going to do a sculpture for their town. I went up. We had heard of Thomas Sayer. We knew him by reputation. But we had no idea what we were getting into. Showed up in the town. Thomas had not even begun that sculpture. There was a meeting in the town hall. I thought we'd be there with a committee and the mayor and a few people who loved art. And there was Thomas with a room full, standing room only, actually. Teachers, parents, children, people from all over town to hear Thomas talk about this work that he does. Now, when he just talked to you now, he made it sound very simple, but it's a powerful process. And as he explained it to those people that night, he drew them into it. He drew me into the story. And the next morning at dawn, we were all out there waiting for it to happen.
Well, as you will see in the documentary on UNC TV Thursday night, Thomas, it is involved work. It does involve backhoes and, you know, a lot of heavy earth-moving equipment. But the people who operate that are as much a part of your art, apparently, as you are. They're all invested in sort of how this thing comes out. Tell us more about sort of how you get the hole dug.
Well, there are many hands that intersect. Not only does my art intersect with the geology and all that eons-old history that got put there over a long period of time, but it also intersects with the hands of many other people, most of whom have never, in their minds anyway, made art before or maybe since. So there are people who are good at things like backhoe operation or digging holes in the ground, which sounds simple, but it's not easy to do, or tying steel or dealing with lifting very, very heavy objects safely and rotating them in midair to then put them on their footings. All that takes a whole range of skills, some of which I don't have a lot of. And so I rely on collaborators who get caught up in it. It's obvious to everyone involved. This is not about making money or a sort of conventional project that one can understand. This is about something bigger than all of us. And most people get caught up in that in a really wonderful kind of way. I've made friends all over the country who will never forget working, and nor will I, working with them shoulder to shoulder, sweat to sweat, in these big holes.
Well, tell us, because people here in the Triangle would certainly be familiar, if they've been to the North Carolina Museum of Art, with those three giant rings that are outside of the museum. Gyre or Geyer?
Geyer
is the name of the work, and you know, that's one example. But I wonder about your inspiration for these. Do you sort of get to the place and are you inspired at that moment, or do you bring your inspiration with you?
Well, both, but I can tell you about a project near the Triangle in Kinston, which was just put up within the last year, right in downtown Kinston, where there was an empty lot and right smack downtown, and where there used to be a tobacco warehouse. And the muse whispered to me, and what came about very quickly was the design of seven iconic tobacco barn facades that fill this block-long space that were made right there on the furrows of a tobacco field that local farmers plowed for us. So rather than digging down in the earth, we sculpted the earth on top of the earth, like fields are, and we cast these tobacco barns on the furrows of essentially a tobacco field with no tobacco growing out of it. So that involved the whole community, really, and 12 to more than 12 local workers who had lots of different kinds of skills, and we all banded together and in 1 month essentially built this city block long sculpture. So it has everything to do with the history of that tobacco town and the agricultural life that has been there for 200 years.
Donna, from your point of view as an observer of all of this, what's the impact of this kind of work on people's perception of art? You know, we all appreciate art. We go to museums. We see things done by other artists, and we make whatever we will of it. But the idea that you would now participate in this, and it remains in your community, what have you seen among the people who have been part of these projects in terms of how they understand art going forward?
Well, it's like Tom has talked about. He has become connected to people all over the country. In the town of Lenoir, specifically, not only did people come out and watch the process, but they feel like they own it. They are part of it. They were part of it. Their handprints are in it. You know, they know that it is theirs, and it represents their community. But beyond that, I think, yes, you're right. We all individually, we make what we will of art. But when we see these giant pieces of concrete, often, you know, we look and we think about them. We have a response. For us, we learned so much about Thomas and his process and what it takes to do these things. It takes weeks. It takes strength. It takes passion. It takes power. Some of them weigh 30,000 pounds. So it's
we're talking about reinforced concrete. So we put the rebar in, then we pour the concrete, then we pull it out, and then we fill the earth back in.
We've learned a lot about rebar over the last 3 years, I can tell you. That's a whole different show. But I think it's important. We believe that the reason we want people to see this story, Earthcaster, is because when they do pass those concrete sculptures in Charlotte or Raleigh or Lenoir or Thailand or Turkey or wherever they might be, that they'll know more about that process because it is unique. It isn't something that anyone else is doing.
It does sound, Thomas, I have to say, though, somewhat disruptive. I mean, I understand that you're trying to reflect the Earth as it is, the contours, and a little bit of having to give in to what the Earth offers you despite your best plans. Get all that. But, I mean, the fact is you're digging a hole, and, you know, and I wonder about the disruption and whether what part that plays in your thinking about this ultimately reflection of our relationship with the rest of the natural world.
Well, I think it's the process of earthcasting is a lot less disrupting than almost any other mold-making process. Casting bronze, for instance, involves, or conventional concrete casting involves large amounts of mold material, which are often thrown away. When we dig a hole in the ground, we borrow that hole, that shape, and all, and that surface and color, and all the rocks that become picked up by the concrete and part of the piece permanently. We borrow that space, and in the end, the dirt goes right back in the hole with virtually no waste whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And the main difference between where we've dug and where we haven't dug is the grass grows better there because the earth has been aerated and the earth likes to be stirred up a bit. But, so I think it's a very, in the end, non-disruptive to nature way of working.
Well, and also to this point, I think that we make this mistake of just somehow distinguishing ourselves from nature. We are a part of it, and we have our artifacts, and you know, and bees have their artifacts. They make little things in the woods as well that weren't there until the bees got there. But to that point, I think you talked about a Wallace Stevens poem that influenced you very much.
Yeah, A Jar in Tennessee, which is a short and deceptively simple poem that Wallace Stevens looking out on the Appalachians in Tennessee, and it's a beautiful view, and his sight goes down to the ground where he sees this bit of human-made pottery, and then his view is cast back up on the long vista, and it's somehow changed by that little bit of man-madeness. And in a way, these large pieces they're not large at all compared to the landscape itself, the scale of landscape or the scale of the sky. They are minor beauty marks that I think of as being kind of focusing devices to see the beauty that's already there.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, I mean, it not only does it change the way we see art, but as you just said, it changes the way we see the natural world that is right. Not an artifact of our own hands. Donna, what surprised you most? What was the biggest surprise for you in making this film?
I think, as we said before, we learned a lot about rebar, concrete. Mm-hmm. And Thomas said how they can't control everything. Sometimes they can't control anything. And it was, I think that part was surprising to me, how hard he works, how much he brings to that process. But I don't know. I was surprised by how taken I was personally, too, by that process, because it's not like anything that I do normally.
What, Thomas, why is public art and the public in this so important to you?
Well, there's been public art around for a long time. Stonehenge could be thought of as public art. But that art functioned, we're not sure exactly how, but clearly it had function for that community, that culture. And I think public art can do that, can tell the stories of local and distinct places and reflect what a place is and therefore help define what a place is. I'm hoping that the work in Kinston, basically it's an artwork about the now moved on history. There's very little tobacco around anymore. And less agriculture in general, and so that particular community of Kinston is remaking itself through culinary arts and visual art and agritourism and that kind of thing. And here's this piece that speaks of both the past and the future. People have come to Kinston to see that piece, and then they eat at the chef and the farmer and et cetera, et cetera. That's their future.
I'm curious to know, too, about any fine-tuning you might do. I mean, there's sort of digging the trench or the hole, and then that's your cast. Do you sort of go down and sort of refine the walls to give you any kind of a smaller and more detailed effect?
Sometimes. We refine more to allow the steel to be in the right place so that it actually reinforces. We really don't edit much what happens. For instance, if it rains, that water in the mold, the rivulets that form as it flows from the field down into the hole or at the bottom of the hole, if there's a lot of rain, it becomes a little pond. That affects what you see in the end. And I've learned to accept that. It's in that way, these pieces, huge and permanent that they are, they record an instant of that hole and the experience of weather and people and everything that went that impinged upon that hole. It records the instant that you pour the concrete into it, and that's a very mercurial and momentary moment.
Thomas Sayer is a Raleigh-based sculptor and the subject of the new film Earthcaster. Thomas Sayer, thank you for being on our program.
My pleasure. It was fun, Dick. Thank you.
Donna Campbell is one of the filmmakers. Thank you, Donna.
Thank you very much.
Earthcaster is going to be shown at UNC TV on Thursday evening at 10 p.m., and you can find out more about the film and see images of the work at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, and Charlie Sheldon Ormond. Robin Copley is our technical director, Al Wadarski filling in today. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.